2007 saw the release of No Country for Old Men, Juno, and even Ratatouille, which I personally loved. It was also the year where Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man trilogy came to a controversial end with a movie that was poorly received by fans and critics alike. Some have deemed it one of the worst superhero movies of all time thanks to a questionable dancing scene and miscasting an important character. Is Spider-Man 3 really that bad? Let's talk about it now in another exciting episode of A Cast of the Past, easily one of the most personally requested from myself. You can check out a brand new episode each and every Sunday talking about our favorite games and movies like this, with yours truly, Juan Velez from Puerto Rico. Joining me from Boston, Massachusetts, we have Ryan McNulty. Ryan, what have you thought about the experience of reviewing the Spider-Man trilogy and it finally coming to an end?
It's been quite a while since I had seen these movies, so this was a great experience to look at each one, really kind of dissect what was good, what was not so good, and hey, we're at the end here. We're at the home stretch. It's the final movie. It's been a fun experience because it had been a while since I had seen these movies.
And from London, Ontario, we have Keith Poshick. Same thing, man. We're coming to an end. How you feeling?
I've enjoyed the journey, even though I think it's taken like a gradual decline and then inevitably jumping off a cliff at the end. I've enjoyed going back and watching these Spider-Man movies, the trilogy that really our generation considers to be like their movies, and appreciate them for what they did at the time and appreciate what came after them. It's been a lot of appreciation on this end.
So as a quick recap, the first Spider-Man movie came out in 2002, I should say.
It was going to be 12,
and then,
my lord.
The sequel came out in 2004. Reviews for both are available on the archive, so if you haven't, you can definitely check those out. Consider leaving a 5-star review, whether it be on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and even on Facebook. But this movie that came out in 2007 was easily the worst reviewed film. But I remember that there was a lot of hype because it seemed like we got Green Goblin, we got Doc Ock, but there was always that Spider-Man character that people were clamoring for, that people
and
were craving for.
And his name was Venom.
Venom. But something happened, and we are going to get to talking about that. But going overall, what did you think about this movie when you saw that it was going to have the Sandman, it was going to have Venom, and it was going to have Topher Grace playing the role of Eddie Brock Jr.? And I remember me as a fan back then, as somebody that loved that 70s show, my first reaction was, what? What about you guys?
I was so excited for this movie. I went with like 10, 12 of my friends, and we just took up an entire row at the theater to see this movie when it first came out, and that was a life-changing experience where we could all be miserable together, I guess.
So I saw this after basically I had already heard all the negative reception. So I didn't see it like right away. I was saying to myself, let's see how bad this really is. And you know, it's yeah.
Did it meet your expectations or exceed it?
I don't think I thought at the time it was as bad as everyone said it was, but you know, hey, that's why we went back and we're taking a look now. But I will say the Topher Grace thing, watching it at the time, I was like, because I didn't know any of the lore behind Venom, I was just like, you know, he really is the perfect counterpart to Tobey Maguire. So in some ways, the casting isn't even that bad.
It's a good point, one that I'd never even thought of. Yeah, they are kind of like salt and pepper.
He was basically TV Tobey Maguire, was he not?
Wow. I never thought about it that way, but it does make a lot of sense. And I think this may be one of the first movies, or I guess after the Super Mario Brothers movie, where, you know, it has its cult following, but not for the right reasons, right? But this one, you know, the Mario movie, people say it's so bad, it's good. This one, people just kept saying, completely forget about it. Let's put it this way. I watched it on Hulu. You know how this is the worst movie objectively of the trilogy? The only one of the three available on Hulu is that one. You only get the third movie. So you got to buy the other one to rent it. Right? So does that not say something about it?
It really does, because I was watching it with my girlfriend because we were every each one of these we've tried to figure out, oh, what's the best way to watch it? It's like, oh, I'll rent the second one on Prime, whatever. And I was asking her, like, oh, where can we watch Spider-Man 3? And she was like, oh, it's on Hulu for free. And I was just like, is that the only one on Hulu for free? And she was like, yes. I was like, ah, okay.
Oh, boy.
I guess that makes sense. Can't get anyone to pay for it.
Yeah, so something we are going to be doing today is talking about Spider-Man 3 first, and then at the very end of the podcast, we are going to talk about the trilogy, and this will not be the last trilogy we review on the podcast. It'll be it for this year, but as always, reach out to us on social media, Cast of the Past, on Twitter, Instagram. Also, we have some exclusive one-minute clips there, but it's a good chance as we prepare for 2020. But without further ado, I'm going to open it up with Keith, because Ryan and I, you were kind of on the fence with the second one, that it was perhaps better than the first. Keith was on that downslope, which I just got to hear this right now. Keith, what did you think about Spider-Man 3?
So to use the analogy of the downslope, it's like, okay, we're rolling down a hill at the start of Spider-Man 1, and we're rolling downwards, and all of a sudden, once we get to 3, we're picking up speed, we're going real fast, and then here's a cliff edge, and we just fall down it completely somewhere in the middle of the movie, and that's how I felt the quality of this movie was. There are good parts. There is a good section of that movie, but there's like a hard point where I don't know if just somebody went in and changed the script, or that's where they ran out of ideas, but it goes from like, eh, to laughably terrible at about the hour mark in that movie. And it's just a fun ride after that you look at, you kind of have your hands in your head and just quote unquote enjoy what you see, because it's not good.
Yeah, so We all were kind of keeping in contact through Discord while we were watching this movie. We didn't all watch it at the same time, but I think I was probably one of the first to watch it. And basically, yeah, that first half of the movie, I was like, where's the problem? You know, this is actually pretty solid. I'm waiting for it to fall apart. And then sure enough, there is definitely a turning point and everything starts to fall apart. So when Juan messaged, you know, dude, I'm halfway through, I'm not hating it, I was like, just wait. It's coming. And, you know, I think probably one aspect we can kind of touch on, one of the reasons that things start to fall apart is I think they start several interesting kind of story threads. I mean, obviously, they tried to pack a lot into this movie, right? They tried to pack 3 villains, essentially. And I think a lot of those beginning threads, they develop pretty well. And then trying to tie everything up at the end becomes a complete disaster. And I think one of those aspects is, you know, we talk about Venom. I think there was just a lot of pressure for them to just shoehorn Venom into this movie. And that might have been kind of the catalyst for this becoming a disaster.
I think that those are pretty much my thoughts exactly. It felt like there was a board meeting somewhere and they had a checklist of, okay, we've got one movie left. What are the things we need to hit? Well, we didn't solve the whole Harry Peter thing, so we got to hit that. We need a villain, so I guess let's put in the Sandman. Oh, but Venom needs to be in these, right? Like, that's the big Spider-Man villain. So you got to put Venom in, and you got to give a reason for Harry and Peter not to fight. So let's give him a concussion, a real bad concussion. And then all of a sudden, they're not friends again. And then they're friends again. And then it just felt like an entire... It was a mess. It was a mess of, we need to hit all of these points, and let's just figure out how to get that done, whether it's good or not.
Quick question for both of you guys. So let's say clean slate on Spider-Man 3 with hindsight, I guess. If you had to pick based on this movie, if you would only focus on one villain, if you had to cut the other two, which one would you pick?
I would have picked Sandman easily.
I want to say Sandman, but at the same time, if I only was able to pick one villain, this entire trilogy was leading up to Peter versus Harry. So I feel like that would have to be the one. But as far as the quality of villain that we got in this movie, it would be Sandman.
Yeah, I'm with you, Keith, basically, that I think, as you said, this whole lead up, the build up was there for Harry versus Peter. And I think they, you know, basically because it was the last one, they felt the pressure to get the other big guys that they had been missing. And the movie definitely suffered for it.
Yeah, so the first or the main story in the movie is obviously Peter versus Harry. It's been worked on since the very first movie, you know, with MJ, with everything. So not just the fact that his father died, it's the relationship issues. And then after that, you have the situations between Peter and MJ. He wants to take the next step, but he's making a lot of mistakes along the way. You know, in this movie, we see that Spider-Man is loved by everybody. He's a superhero. He's a superstar. But then MJ not really having the best of luck, where it seems like her performance is not great. She gets canned. And then Peter tries to basically make it all about himself. You know, Spider-Man's got all the fame. He's got all the comic books. He's got all the Halloween costumes. And obviously, she feels like hell. But then in addition to this, because those two things can easily make a movie, you add Sandman and the whole thing. And this is obviously going to be a spoiler, but we're talking about a decade plus old movie. Initially, we thought that the robber from the first movie was the one that killed Uncle Ben. But then in this one, we conveniently switched things out, and that was actually the collaborator of Sandman. And even in then, we first hear or get the speculation that he purposely killed Uncle Ben. And then, we're still not done with the story, we find out that he mistakenly shot him. But then, we're not done, because in addition to all of these stories, we have Eddie Brock Jr. The Jr. is very important. He kind of shows up out of nowhere, and then he's basically Peter Parker version 2.0 in the movie, from the mannerisms to everything. He becomes a photographer. He gets a full-time job, gets fired from the full-time job in about 5 minutes, give or take, and then he wants to have a revenge story. And they try to do this in about 2 hours. I'm exhausted just explaining this. Out of all these things, yeah, right now.
Not to mention, we have, you know, we talk about the Venom thing, the most shoehorned in basically plot device in existence, where literally a meteor just comes from the sky and crashes into the earth, and this black sludge comes out, and that's the catalyst for evil Peter Parker.
And but that's not even all the threads, because we haven't even talked about the Peter Harry one.
Yeah, oh, it's true. Well,
There's two parts of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we start with the fact that I know they forced Venom in, but they could have done a lot of this without the black sludge, right? Because I like that the first Spider-Man movie is Peter Parker basically learning to become a hero, right? And then the second movie is Peter Parker dealing with the consequences of what it is to be a hero. And then the third movie is, and they rightfully did focus on this before the even black stuff come, the black sludge comes into play. And that is when you like dealing with the fame, almost like how, what it does to your ego. You know, Spider-Man's this big hero. Everybody loves him. It's going to his head. And Mary Jane, her career is falling apart. She's having a tough time. So their careers are kind of going in opposite directions. And Peter needs to learn to be, you know, more empathetic and kind of keep his ego in check and be, you know, be able to help his, you know, fiance or to-be fiance. And I think they could have easily told that story without inserting the stupid black suit Spider-Man stuff. It just, I feel like that's where things really started to trail off.
Mm-hmm. Because as somebody that didn't like the character Peter Parker, even from the previous movies, like to me, there was no like redeeming qualities about him to make me feel sorry for him when he hit that like low point. Because when he got the black suit and like gained all this arrogance, like he just went from being a bad person to a worse person. But at the same time, I didn't really feel bad for Mary Jane either, because she just came off like an extremely selfish character. Like, oh, I suck, but my boyfriend's doing real good, so I guess I should be miserable about that. Like, it's extremely selfish. The only person in this movie that I don't think like that came off as a respectable human being is Harry Osborn. Everybody else sucks. The butler being the worst, but we'll get to him later.
We'll get to that guy. We will get to that guy for sure. But what I find fascinating, and everybody can check this out on the Spider-Man 2 review, and you kind of brought it up, Keith, is that my biggest gripe with Spider-Man 2 is that I didn't like Harry or Peter. Here, they didn't double down on that. They like quadrupled down on that. It's like, hey, if you didn't like Peter on Spider-Man 2, you sure as hell ain't gonna like him here, because like he's gonna be a spider asshole. So he's gonna
You know what they got rid of, Keith? You should be happy they got rid of the everything goes wrong for Peter.
Yes, I will give them that. I was so happy that they dialed that back. They just replaced it with something arguably worse.
Because I think the story of this was, hey, everything's actually going right for him now, and it's the people around him who are like having a worse time.
Yeah. But that being said, let's break down the movie into two aspects. I actually kept track of when the movie changes, and we'll talk about that definitive change. It happens in around an hour and 20 minutes, give or take. That's where the attitudes come in and everything. But I'll be honest, the first hour of this movie is my favorite Spider-Man movie in this trilogy. I think the fact that they began this movie not wasting any time, you wanted to see Harry versus Spider-Man, you're going to see it right now. And I thought it was a really big deal that it wasn't Harry versus Spider-Man, it was Harry versus Peter Parker. The fact that Peter was still in the Peter outfit. And even on the graphical sense, that's pretty difficult, right? Because when you first have the Spider-Man outfit, when it comes to the CGI, it's a lot easier to get by with that. Yeah. But here, it actually looked really good. You know, we poked fun at the first movie and the fact that that was considering the circumstances.
Look, I will say 2007 looked good, let's say.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put it this way. I got the impression that they spent most of their time on that opening Sandman scene where he turns into this, like where he's in the pit. It seemed like that's where their CGI dollars went, because I think the beginning was a little rough.
But the action was fun though. The fact that it was, they did a chase scene. Yeah. And we've talked about the fact that in the previous one, especially the first one, there wasn't like a notable fight scene. You know, with the second one, we got iconic moments with the train stoppage and all that. But here, they did a lot of really good stuff. And I thought
action in this one.
Yeah, way more action. And honestly, I thought that the story of like, look, Harry hates Spider-Man, but he hates Peter. The fact that he actually got the gas, but unlike his dad, he didn't do the immediately after turning into the gas monster. Right? It's like father, like
Harry
son, man.
Harry's got that gas. It's just, he did it in under a more controlled environment. Somehow he doesn't need the scientist dude and everything. He can just do it on himself. His own.
Because he has ghost Willem Dafoe telling him exactly what to do.
That is true. And then the other thing in this first hour of the movie is the whole thing with MJ, where I think they both did a fairly good job of like, hey, MJ is not doing great, but then here she's still supporting Peter. It's like, we get it, you're super famous. It's like till the later parts of the movie where she becomes a different kind of character. So what did you think about those first 45 minutes that you are getting? See, you're basically getting what you expect to see from the last movie in this trilogy before it all kind of goes down south.
I was on board, man. Like you, I think that first hour of the movie is really strong. We have, like you said, the action scene with Harry, that conflict continues. And then the beginning part of Sandman's story is actually really compelling. You really sympathize with this situation. They do a very good job of making you understand what his motivation is. And then, of course, we get some of the Daily Bugle scenes with Jameson. You know, he has to take all these pills now. And, you know, a lot of really funny moments, too. And, yeah, it's just really, really strong. And I feel like if they wanted to do this movie right, it's like they either needed to cut some threads or make this movie like 3.5 hours long, but that would have been way too long for anyone to want to sit through. It was very ambitious, but they really did nail that first half.
They really did. It's some of, like Juan said, it's some of the best Spider-Man that is in that trilogy. And if they just would have dialed it back and just left Venom out of it and just had this whole Harry Peter thing, I guess you could still do the concussion and then just have the Sandman in the background. I think it would have been a much better movie, but like I mentioned earlier, it felt like, okay, we've got this lined up, we've got this script taken care of, but we still got to do the rest of this in the movie. So how do we rush to get it all in? And that's when it falls apart.
No, and I remember in the first movie, one of our biggest things that we pointed out is that, you know, we have all the MCU stuff. And that first Spider-Man movie, it just felt like a normal movie with Spider-Man kind of just shoehorn in there. The second one, it's like, okay, we're getting in there. But this third one, the first hour, this could easily blend in with the MCU because you had the action right at the beginning and it's like cinematic superhero movie action. But then, Ryan, that scene with Jameson, it was stupidly ridiculous, but I loved it. Like, yeah. It's a superhero movie. Come on now. And the fact that it's like the blood pressure, but then just secretary trying to explain. Yeah. It's dumb, but it's like a really good dumb and he pulls it off so well. But then, and I think that this is always kind of like the detriment to it, Eddie Brock Jr. I think that he never fit into the movie. It almost felt like they, and I don't know if this was actually the case, they did the movie and then they reshot the movie to include him, because I feel like you can easily edit this movie in ways where he would be gone and you would not miss him, because from the moment that he shows up, it's always like, how convenient that just another photographer kind of sneaks up in here, and it's the time. Like, if you gave him his movie and you removed the Sandman here, you could have given him some time, but it's like so fast. And then Peter basically gets him fired almost immediately, like in movie time, right? But then I remember at the very end of the movie, at one point, Eddie says, "Do you remember what you did to me?" I'm like, "Yes, we were watching a movie. And that happened less than 40 minutes ago, dude. Like, we know he cost you the job. Why are you reminding that?"
But he said it with
that?
Fangs because it's edgy.
And with the stupid close-up.
They should not have gave him fangs. It looked so awful.
Yeah, but what do you
it's
think
an
about
interesting
Eddie Brock?
Point. It's an interesting point because I'm thinking about all of the key scenes that Eddie Brock Jr. and even Venom are a part of, and you really don't need that character in it. Because the end fight, that big fight, if it was just Spider-Man versus Sandman, I think you would have gotten the same thing out of it. And yeah, it feels tacked on. It does feel really tacked on. I'm just having this revelation here. Like, yeah, that pretty much sums up all of my thoughts on the movie perfectly, where it's just something that was there for the sake of being there. There wasn't that much substance behind
it. And partly they probably wanted to do like 2v2 where it's, Harry and Spider-Man versus Venom and Sandman.
You have a giant man made out of sand. Yeah, you don't
that
would have
been enough.
V2.
And yeah, if they cut out Eddie Brock, I think they definitely needed a little bit more time between Harry and Peter having their big kind of fight where Harry gets his face, like half his face burnt up. There needed to be a little bit more there before it's like, hey, team up with me. It felt a little bit rushed. And they needed a little bit more time to develop that. And then I think it would have been a lot cooler for them to then fight together at the end, because it gets a little too cute at the end where it's like, hey, Peter, need some help over here, man. Am I interrupting? Like, it got a little too cute there where it's like these guys were killing each other about 40 minutes ago.
Yeah. And then I guess the other thing we got to get to now is the whole concussion. I feel I live in Puerto Rico, so this part is very important. We have a lot of soap operas here. And my biggest joke with my mother is like, she'll always come to me like, Juan, I'm checking out this incredible soap opera. And my joke question is, did somebody suffer memory loss? How do you know? I'm like, it's just
telenovela,
a thing.
Baby.
It's yeah, all telenovela. It happens in all of them. And I was just sitting there, and I remember I thought this back when this movie first came out. It's like, I get it. You got to stretch this out. You gotta lead, you know, all the way to the end. Are you kidding me? This is it. Just convenient memory loss. And just, it's like, hey, just in case you're not sure that he forgets, it's like that hospital
scene. He remembers
again. Where he tells the nurse, they're my best friends. And he has like the dumbest yeah. smile. You just want to like pounce his face to death. Really? Did you really need to do that? What do you guys think about that entire experience?
There's two parts of this, two separate thoughts that really pissed me off about this whole thing. And the first part being that you have to remember that this has been built up for three films now. That big fight, and while the fight scene was great, I will give it that, they got it out of the way in the first half hour, 45 minutes of the movie, and like, yep, we're done. Here's a hit to the head, and we're gonna go do our own thing now.
It's kind of a
slap in the face to the entire culmination of this issue, and then just for him to remember again. Like, that entire whole head injury thing didn't need to happen because we still got to the same place, no matter if he lost his memory or not.
Do you know why it needed to happen? First of all, let's not forget the fact that Evil Harry at the beginning, of course, when Mary Jane's doing her play, he's up in the balcony area. He's got his little binoculars. Like, could he be any more stereotypical?
Oh,
like,
it was so bad.
Yes, I am the big bad villain. You know why they did the memory loss thing? Because they needed to stall for time while they developed the rest of the story. Because if you have Sandman and you have Venom...
So have him be hit in the head, knock him out, and then he comes back later. There's no reason to do the friend thing.
They just wanted to keep his presence in the movie to build up, like, oh, when's he gonna remember and then come after Peter? I totally understand why they did it. They probably could have figured out a less cliche way of having him have a presence during the movie and then kind of get to the end, but I think they just needed to minimize him as a threat while they established other threats.
Should have done the coma, but that's not the only thing that pissed me off. I still got point two. So he hits his head, he has the head injury, it's established that messes him up real bad. Then the exact same thing happens about three other times in that movie, where it's the exact same thunk, hit his head, fall off his little hoverboard, and hit the ground, and everything's okay. It's not how it works, folks. If you get hit in the head that bad once, it's probably going to do the same thing again, if not worse, because that's brain damage. And the fact that they constantly went back to that well was just, it was almost comical, to me anyway.
You know what's sad? We've talked about a ton of characters, and we forgot another character, which is Gwen. And she's technically part of the story. It's like, yeah, you want more characters? You get all of them. And this is, once again, the definitive example of what happens when a decade goes by, decade plus like 10 years, and you have like MCU Avengers movies that can pull off, you know, multiple characters in one movie. But here, they were definitely still working on this. So one of the other factors that we have to bring up is the relationship between MJ and Peter. We mentioned in the first movie, they went from not knowing each other to all of a sudden they were best friends to they kind of love each other, but they can't be together because of the responsibilities of Spider-Man. And it's in the second one that you finally go get him, Tiger, and then everybody's happy, but then everything's going great for Spider-Man and Peter, but not so much MJ. But this, as you mentioned earlier, Ryan, is where Spider-Man becomes a bit of a spider asshole, and Peter in particular, where this scene, I just don't get it. There's no logic to this. They recreate the kissing scene between Gwen Stacy, now instead of MJ, and Spider-Man. And obviously, Mary Jane is there present. This is after Spider-Man saved Gwen, which I'm just going to point out. Gwen's father was about to see his daughter die and fall to her death, and he didn't give a crap, but I'm just going to say, I mean, hey, maybe he didn't like his daughter all that much, but What did you guys think about that when Peter Parker / Spider-Man kissed Gwen, and he was like, he didn't contemplate that. He was just like, hey, sure, why not? It's Spider-Man, even though this is totally how I kissed Mary Jane. From a logic storytelling standpoint, it just didn't make any sense to me, knowing who the character was. What about you guys?
It was more fuel on the, well, I guess every character sucks in this movie fire of just everybody's a bad person, because there's no logical storytelling reason why that should have happened.
I think it comes down to Spider-Man, again, the fact that he was overconfident and he's getting sucked into being the hero and wants to show off and be the crowd pleaser, because, you know, he acted like an, you know, like a jerk when they're at the French restaurant and he's going to propose to Mary Jane and he totally screws that up. So again, I think that what they were trying to do, but I don't think they took it far enough that it was believable that he would be that stupid. And he wasn't even, I don't even think he had the black suit on underneath yet. I think it was even before then.
It was.
So it just came off like, oh, you know, Peter Parker is just an idiot. Why would he do that? I think they were trying to tell that overconfidence story and they didn't get it to a believable point that he would be that, you know, stupid.
Mm-hmm, because it was very contradictory to the way that they'd been developing Peter Parker as a character, because whenever there was like bumbling Peter moments, it was all like physical moments where he would trip and fall or something like that. Like the intellect of Peter Parker was never in question. He always like had good intentions, but it was just bad things happening around him. Then you have this scene that does the opposite, where this is just a bad call no matter what. Like, you know, Mary Jane, your girlfriend, is in the audience because you just spoke with her 2 minutes ago, and all of a sudden that's okay. It was very like a very anti-point to what they'd been doing for the rest of everything else.
And then now getting to Sandman, and I know we're kind of all over the place, but like I'm trying to do my best
so
to do chronological
movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's like so difficult because it's like this is all happening pretty much at the same time. It's a rare occurrence in a movie where usually they do the three-story arc. I remember we talked about Spider-Man 2, and I mentioned that I love Doc Ock, right? But you can definitely tell when they just pulled him out of the movie and then just inserted him back in later. In this one, they kind of went, just keep him all at all times. Every character has to be in at least one scene at some point, but it is convoluted because now this is not an entire movie. You add Sandman in. So Sandman becomes a Sandman because he's surrounded by sand, a lot of technology, and it just happened. Whatever.
He just finds himself in this, you know, every villain or superhero. Oh, you lodged into some science experiment.
You really need to be more careful with science is what
right?
this
no
movie
safety.
Taught me.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it must be a bird that landed. It's like a 200-pound bird.
But he's
Buy
Mr. Sandman now. And
Bring
now,
me a dream.
Give,
that was a bad joke.
What's the rest of the song?
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Boom, 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 boom,
boom.
This has been the Cast of the Past break. Now to your regularly scheduled
Sorry,
average
acapella.
Podcast.
Acapella to the past.
But then we get the Sandman battle between Spider-Man and Sandman. This is before, I believe, he finds out that Sandman is actually the killer, the original killer for Uncle Ben. And that wakes up yet another side story, which is, holy crap, the actual killer is still at large. Aunt May also finds out. And this is where you get the indication that Spider-Man and Peter Parker are
and
changing.
And again, Aunt May, super okay that the killer is still out there. Didn't really react to
She's
that at
cool
all.
She's a cool aunt, man. She's a cool aunt. She doesn't care about anything. Yeah. But that is yet another story. And it's around this time that everything just kind of starts to really get torn into shreds. Because then Spider-Man / Peter Parker has this killing story where he wants to get rid of Sandman. But then at the same time, he's about to propose to Mary Jane. And then he's thinking this is all going to go according to plan. But then she realizes it, you know, and points out that, hey, who's Gwen? And just in case that's not crystal clear, Gwen conveniently is eating at the same damn restaurant, because there's no other restaurants in that town. You know, who cares? It's New York, no other restaurants. So they eat in the same place, and Gwen is just like rubbing all over Peter Parker, even though she knows MJ is his girlfriend. Just give me something, guys. I'm tired, man. This is too much.
Everybody sucks.
There's a lot of conveniences. That's clearly one of them. I think another big one is, Spider-Man's at the church banging against the bell to get the sludge off of him, and Eddie Brock happens to be praying in that exact church at that time. That was just an ultimate forced-in moment. Like I said, we literally have a meteor like just crash into the ground. No other word on that, by the way. No other word on that. Just nope. Meteor hits, black sludge, you got Venom. They just literally just it literally fell from the sky. So they had to pull a lot of things out of their ass, okay?
This movie is an entire just like a random movie generator. Hey, so Spider-Man movie, he's about to propose, but it goes wrong. But then we add three characters. Like, it just keeps piling up and piling up and piling up.
It feels like fan fiction where, here's the story they tell, but you gotta get Venom in there. And then Harry gets a concussion.
So before we get to the second movie within the movie, is there anything else about the first part before this happens?
I mean, I think we've already kind of cut on to the second movie anyway, so let's just get into it.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. So what ends up happening is...
And then the symbiote shows up on screen and everything changes.
Notice how I've avoided to try to say that, because I don't think I can say it.
Symbiosis? Yeah.
Yeah. But what ends up happening is that fully absorbed Spider-Man's outfit conveniently turns black, and then he loves it. Like, he falls in love with that. But even then, he's aware. It's kind of like the ring in Lord of the Rings, where they're aware of the power. And at first, he kind of like, he has the regular spider suit, but then he's got the black suit, right? But then eventually, he craves that black suit, and that eventually consumes his character. And he becomes a legitimate asshole. But this time, he fully embraces it. He's no longer surprised. And this is when, you know, he's now with MJ. This is when the movie goes south. But technically for him, it goes up, right? Because then he's all of a sudden good looking, because you put your hair down and then people like you. And then is when things begin to happen. So talk to me. Give me a play-by-play almost of when their idea of, you know, Peter Parker's bad when he starts disco dancing. How do you guys feel about that?
I thought it was actually hilarious. And I know people are like, oh my God, this is terrible. This is so cringe. And there's a lot of cringe to it. But when I first saw it and when I saw it now, I'm having fun when I'm watching this part. Okay. Watching Tobey Maguire do these like ridiculous, like, hand motions and point, like, cause you can clearly see the crowd, like, the people at the pedestrians are not impressed with him at all. Apparently somebody made a cut of this where there's no music, so what it would sound
it's
like
wonderful.
If Tobey Maguire was just walking down the street with no music playing, how awkward that would look. But I thought this whole sequence into the jazz bar, while so ridiculous and did not need to be there, I was having fun watching it because of how absurd it was.
It was fun, and it's fun because I knew what I was getting into at that point, where it's been built up as like just this bad thing, but it's one of those things where it's so bad it's good, because you can't help but just cringe a little bit as you're watching it and be like, oh God, this is some lame stuff in a movie that has a lot of lame stuff already. Somehow this creams of the crops it all the way to the top, and it's fun right up until the jazz bar, and then it goes back to being real lame.
My favorite part about that is when he changes his suit.
Can we get
suit.
Some shade?
Oh my
God. Yeah.
I have live commentary notes for this episode. I curse in that so much. I don't even know if I can share a picture, but I'll conveniently show something just so people can get my live sense as I was watching that. But when he changes his suit, that it goes to a wide camera angle, not moving, and then he just gets jiggy with it. He's like going all out. Because before, you're at least getting camera cuts that can sort of make this less awkward, but nope. I can only imagine the actual like acting out of that part. Like, okay, Tobey Maguire, action. He's like, yeah, I'm getting paid millions for this, boy. Yeah.
It was amazing. I loved it. It amazing was the best thing ever.
And going back to the previous scene, because this is all sort of, there's a lot of dancing happening here. We see MJ and we see Harry. They're cooking together. And then you get that sexual tension between them. You do. You yeah. really do. But
tell us more.
It's so random, though. It's so random, though, because it's like, here's MJ complaining about the fact that Peter's kissing another girl and all that. But it's like, none of them care about anybody, really. If you really think about it, throughout
yeah,
these
she
movies,
goes right to Harry. And they're just making omelets together.
Yeah. It's like, well, you make omelets together, you fall in love. That's just science. But what did you guys think about that part? Because all of a sudden, they do a little disco dancing, and then who knows what happened afterwards?
Once
maybe
again,
the butler watched.
Everybody but Harry Osborn sucks in that movie, because this is the point where I kind of turned on the MJ character, because it was insanely hypocritical. She just did that exact same thing, and then the forgetfulness storyline just abruptly ends. Like, Harry has a shot of whiskey and all of a sudden, boom, his memory's back. It was all very quick in a way that I wasn't a big fan of.
It's almost like the movie was rushed in some way.
Oh,
you
maybe.
Know, because they had so much going on. But so Harry, you saying Harry doesn't suck when he basically forces Mary Jane to break up with Peter Parker?
Well, yes, that sucked, but it's in the way that he was a villain, because that was just the character arc.
I get your point. I thought we were talking about like people as a person.
I'm talking about like characters that you're supposed to like just being piles of garbage.
But that whole sequence led to my favorite part in the entire Spider-Man trilogy.
I hope it's the same one for me.
And it's after him and Peter talk at the restaurant. I laughed so hard.
God.
The lady's just like, oh, can I warm you up? And she's like, how's the pie? And he's just like, so good. The way he says so good, I just bursted out laughing. I totally forgot about that part. It just, he's so into how much he loves that pie.
It was the greatest thing.
Yeah, the
that
real best
scene
part
was top notch.
The real best part of it happens immediately after when the truck goes by, and then he just disappears, and there's like an actor that's behind him that's like, the hell? Where'd that guy go? It's just the best.
The great thing about that scene is that the tone is so insanely different from the rest of the movie, but it works. Like, that Harry was awesome, because it was almost like an episode of Jerry Springer or Maury. Because he's woken up, right? He's no longer suffering
woken
from
Harry
the concussion.
Osborn.
Exactly. So he's woken. So he knows that he's going to reveal that he's the other guy. But he literally says, I'm the other guy. I was watching the movie and I knew this was coming up. And I yelled purposely like, oh my God. Oh, this is happening right now. Because it's like, they just had so much fun. And they needed to do a little bit more of that in the movie.
I feel like there was a brief moment we got a preview of like Pineapple Express James Franco.
Yeah.
With like the so good thing. And then when he sees him from the window and he smiles and like winks at him. I was like, that felt like modern James Franco that we got for like a second.
And can you imagine if we had more of that Harry in the movie? Because if you really think about it, and this goes back to Keith's point. Say you remove the concussion, right? Before the concussion, he was already gassed in terms of like the special abilities and all that that he got from his dad. So that personality that we got to see in that scene, it was there already. It was just kind of removed because of the concussion. But if you removed Venom from the movie or Sandman, got rid of something, and you added this Harry like 30% earlier into the movie, man, that would have been awesome, because after this, there's no more of that. Because then the worst character in movie history just freaking shows up. Somebody talked to me about the stupid butler that's been irrelevant the entire time. And it's like, oh, yeah. Oh, guess what? I've seen some shit. Your dad, he killed himself. It was him.
I've spent a lot of time trying to justify it, but there's actually no reason why that man should have withheld that information.
Yeah.
He literally let Harry, his employer, suffer for years, even though he's like, oh, I love you, Harry, and I loved your father, but I'm going to let you think Spider-Man did it for years because I'm a prick. And then
you're
just
like,
word for word.
Man, you ain't Alfred. Get the hell out of here. Like, nobody likes you.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Why not tell him?
I mean, come on. You see that character and you immediately can just picture everyone in the writing room like, well, how do we turn Harry good? Well, let's just give some throwaway lines to the butler to give an excuse for him to make a baby face turn, you know?
Like, and then the next question was, wait, we have a butler in the movie? Yeah, we can use that.
Well, he's been there a few times, so he was established.
Yeah, but he was definitely just forced in as a way for them to, like, what's the fastest way we can get from point A to point B? The butler knew it. The butler knew it, man. He sees everything.
He's known it all along, but just kept that to
himself.
He's the
eyes and ears of the mansion, you know?
And if you notice, nobody in this movie grieves, because going back to the Aunt May thing,
they don't have time.
Right? Yeah, no, they got time for that, because when you go back to when Peter revealed that he was there when Uncle Ben died, Aunt May took her maybe like 5 minutes to get over it. Here, think about this with Harry. The entire Spider-Man trilogy from the first movie has been, he thought that Spider-Man killed his father. Turns out his father killed himself accidentally, but he did that. The butler contains this information for himself. For the entire trilogy. So the first thing he should have done, because especially he's technically bad Harry. Remember, he's in the evil gas. Ooh, he should have like killed the butler.
He's like, gassed to the gills.
He's gassed
God.
To the gills. And now he's like, yo, Spider-Man, we're best friends, man. It was all a mistake. I tried to kill you. You gave me a concussion. We're all good, right? Everybody forgives everything so easily. Nothing freaking matters in this movie, man.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
I got nothing else to
and
say
also
about
the
this.
Fact,
nothing matters.
Let's also touch on the fact, because we haven't really talked a ton about the Sandman yet, and we talk about, oh, guess who's the real killer? Sandman's story was pretty compelling up until they revealed that. It was actually a disappointment to me, because, yes, I feel like they always had this need that they need to directly relate the villain to Spider-Man in some way. Like, he has to be connected. And mm-hmm. It just felt, I don't know if this goes to the comic book lore of what Sandman's actual
That's
origin is.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know if this is a comic book thing and they felt like they needed to put it in, or if it's unique.
Exactly, because it definitely felt like, hey, we need an excuse for Spider-Man to give a crap about wanting to take down the Sandman, as if him just going off and, you know, killing people isn't enough. You know what I mean? It definitely felt like, oh, we got to flip the script. And like you said, they flipped the script again, where it's like, oh, he accidentally killed him. It was just like they had to keep adding these twists, and they didn't need to, because it came off as cheap. It came off as, again, you picturing the writer's room. How do we get them to care about the Sandman? How does Peter Parker need, like, how do we make it personal between the Sandman and Peter Parker? And they don't spend, you know, they have kind of like a fight scene and a half, because Peter Parker's mainly fighting Venom in the end of the movie. So again, it doesn't really have enough time to develop. So they didn't have to make it that personal anyway. It just comes off as, again, cheap writing in a lot of places.
I will say, though, I did enjoy the train fight scene between those two. Just something about Peter Parker putting his face against the train and then the sand just slowly eroding away. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
again, the sand effects were actually very impressive.
Yeah, I'd say that overall, it's like we recently reviewed Link's Awakening, and this is going to be the weirdest comparison I've done in the podcast, but I think both things for us, maybe not for other people, have something in common. You can have too much of a good thing. You can add too many things and it becomes detrimental. Sometimes scaling things back just a little bit, streamlining them. Like, I know this was going to be the last movie, so they probably know contractually you're not going to get a Spider-Man 4. If you get it, you know, we saw Andrew Garfield with a future one, and then Tom Holland and all that, but they wanted to get everything here. But then we haven't even gotten to the turn for Eddie Brock, a character that's barely been in the movie. Then he's kind of an asshole, but then Peter Parker's kind of an asshole. Turns out Eddie Brock photoshopped a picture of Spider-Man to make it look like the black spider suit, gets a job, gets fired, and then it immediately becomes a revenge story about a man that we've barely just met, yet we're supposed to care about him, yet that man that we're supposed to care about also becomes the bad guy.
Yeah.
In the span of about 30 to 40 minutes.
And how are you supposed to care about somebody that's just another piece of garbage in this movie? This is a guy who cheated his way into a job, and then because he screwed up, he wants to murder Peter Parker. There's nothing good about that. Yeah. That's just a bad person.
And then he's just randomly like, yo, Sandman, this guy, I don't like him. You want to kill him with me? He's like, I'm in. It's just like, that was, again, where you're just like, oh, you know, everything is just coming apart, that this is super lame, and the world is crumbling around you, and then Venom dies to friggin' musical pipes. Like, yep, that's how we're going down.
But not before maybe the most edgelord thing I've ever seen in a movie, that writing in the web where it's like, come and fight us, Spider-Man. Have a chance. Maybe the worst thing in that movie where I just audibly laughed out loud because it was so dumb.
Thank you for pointing that out. I forgot about that.
How could you?
That entire last sequence just made very little sense, because the one part of the movie that I do give them credit for, right? So they had Peter go full evil, but then he shoves Mary Jane. And I think that was a good scene at the end there, where it's like, okay, there's a turning point happening. And the church part was actually not bad. You know, despite the convenience of the Venom thing, it's like he realizes the suit is going to destroy him. So once again, another comparison to like Lord of the Rings, where you got to melt the ring, you got to melt the Terminator, right? So here, you got to get rid of the spider suit. Eddie Brock Jr. just happens to be at the very bottom of the only church, apparently, in New York. So then he gets absorbed by the symbiote. I hopefully said it right. And then he becomes Venom. And then Ryan, the fact that you were able to so casually talk about the part where Venom and Sandman were together, think about that. We've been waiting since, like, I remember I first played Spider-Man in an arcade game early 90s. Ever since that point, I had wished I saw Venom on the big screen, like a real life Venom. So this is it. That scene is the first time that we get to see Venom talking, and then he's just like in a hallway, you know, in a corridor, just like, yo, Sandman, I heard you also like Spider-Man. And then his voice is just Eric, the Topher Grace voice.
Yeah, you get Eric Foreman with vampire teeth, you know, just.
Oh, God.
You know, like, hey, Sandman, after I finish my Price Mart shift, you want to fight Spider-Man?
Dumbass. You don't like Spider-Man too. Let's go kill him.
They should have cast Red Foreman as Venom, all right?
That would have been amazing. That would have been amazing.
He would have kicked Spider-Man's ass.
You know, if there was one movie where I would have loved to see a camera from the big screen pointed towards the audience to see a live reaction, it would have been that scene, because it's like, okay, the movie's been bad, but now we got Venom, right? This is your chance to redeem.
And somehow
holy crap,
it gets worse.
They didn't even change the voice.
They needed to do some sort of like audience, you know, reaction test, like a line graph throughout the movie where you see it. It's like going up. It's steadily up for the first half of the movie, and then you see it start to dip, and then it starts to crash really hard towards the end of the movie. That would have been amazing to see, because you can already just picture what that graph would look like.
So that leads to the final battle, where we do have a tag team match. It's Sandman and Venom in one corner, and then we have Spider-Man. First, it's a handicap match, 2-on-1, and just when he's literally getting hammered, I love that, literally hammering down Spider-Man, freaking Green Goblin's like, hey, you know, tried to kill each other, now we're friends, Let's go back, and I'm going to make jokes as we're literally doing this, and Mary Jane is hanging above us, but even she doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, right? Because nobody matters. So what did you guys think about that final battle leading up to the musical, literal musical finale?
It was just, like, at that point, you just
don't care.
It's
hard to find words.
Yeah, everything's already fallen apart, and you just don't care. I feel like Sandman's story kind of fell apart. You didn't really, the sandcastle crumbled down. You didn't really care. That was
there
bad.
There it is.
Wow.
That's the thing that I think I hated the most about it was the commentary and the weird headlines that were going on.
The news. Yeah, the fact that they did it as a news segment part. That was so bad that it did not need that at all. It made it way more lame because they're like, oh, the Sandman, even though like the news hasn't even, nobody's really talked about the Sandman that much.
Just in the nick of time, Spider-Man comes to save this hostage. More at 11.
That's a good point. Removed all the news segment stuff. That made it way more cringy too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Ryan, that's a good point because up until this point, the other villains have been human beings. Like you would see them walking down the street. Doc Ock, he's got the octopus things and all that, but he's a human. Green Goblin in a suit. He's a freaking huge Sandman. Literal Sandman.
It is a literal Sandman.
And everybody's just kind of like, once again, we don't care. There's no emotions in this Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I do love the Sandman character. I think that at the end, you know, once Venom is magically gone and the symbiote stuff gets blown away.
By the way, did anybody else catch this where Harry takes one of those grenades to the side of the face? He just has a little bit of Bernie going on. And then Venom takes one of them and all of a sudden he's evaporated into dust. Let's have a little bit of consistency here,
sand,
folks.
Sand is less durable than a human face, I guess.
Man, stupid. that was horrible.
Sandman actor, does he remind anyone else of like an older John Cena? I don't know. That's just,
wow.
Maybe it's just me.
Yep, he 100%
wow. Yeah.
I'm glad it's not just me.
But I really like that last scene.
I was
going to
say
scene,
like
though.
Middle-aged John Cena, but John Cena is kind of middle-aged at this point, you know.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, you've been watching Nerd Off Wrestling where it's like John Cena is no longer that young up-and-comer. He's actually the older John Cena now. It's a little sad, but The whole fact that Sandman at the end, you know, tried to justify his actions by saying, yeah, his daughter was dying, desperate. I don't know what Keith is laughing. Daughter's dying.
No.
I guess nobody cares now.
I'll get there.
Okay. I was concerned. But the fact that I think that last scene would have meant a lot more if he did kill purposely Uncle Ben, but it was like, yo, my daughter was dying. I was desperate. And it would have been this thing of like, man, like, I'm not justifying your actions, but I can almost understand the desperation. And then, you know, if Peter said, like, I forgive you, would have been like, wow, that would have been a really big ending. But the fact that it was like, oh, I accidentally shot him, you've forgiven me, but it's like, I really wasn't intending on killing him. It softened the end of the movie far too much for the conclusion of the trilogy. So, Keith, please fill me in, man. What's going on?
I agree with everything you said, but it's the fact that scene ends with him literally blowing away into the wind. It just ruins all
magical.
Of it for me. It was just so stupid. It's like, oh, now that Spider-Man's forgiven him, he can die as a Sandman in peace and just blow away into the mist.
I don't know. He technically, it seems like, oh, I can leave now in peace or whatever. But, you know, he did that effect a lot. He could have just been like, I'm going to go over
here
now. That's
true. Like, hey, your daughter's still dying. Are you still need money?
yeah, that hasn't really, your circumstances have not really changed, sir.
Yeah. Huh.
So you just blew away into the wind for no reason.
He's like, I'd like to save my daughter, but I know the runtime of this movie is almost up. So see ya.
So
Spider-Man 4, oh wait. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, and they obviously tried to connect it to his father. Harry dies in many ways the same way his father did, which is using the goblin board. Of course, he doesn't get hit by himself, but that's what attacks
him. For some
reason,
I thought you were talking about Uncle Ben.
Oh my goodness, man.
I was like,
I think
it was a little different.
Ultimate plot twist. No. But I just thought that usually, and maybe I'm wrong here, when you end a movie trilogy, this is where we're going to transition from not just Spider-Man 3, but then the overall trilogy. It's like, you're ending not this movie, you're ending the story, yet your way of ending the story is you're sort of justifying some loose ends from the beginning one. You killed off two characters, but then nothing really gets solved. Think about that. At the end of the day, Peter and MJ at the end, he kind of goes into the place where she's singing, but the emotion, not there anymore for me. I was disconnected. It felt really forced, like, oh, I guess now they're going to try to make up. What did you guys think of the conclusion of Harry's death and then that scene with MJ and then Spider-Man 3 as a whole?
Well, to start with that scene with MJ, she was literally singing about how her heart was closed. Like, you couldn't beat the audience over the head harder about the point you were trying to make there, and it just completely killed it.
Yeah, it ends on a pretty sour note. It's like Harry's dead, and MJ and Peter, like, they have some work to do if they want to be together again. Yeah, it's pretty dark. It almost seems like they maybe wanted to do more. I don't know what the plans were, if there was any plans for Spider-Man 4, but we know everything fell apart pretty hard with this, and, you know, after the whole reception to this movie. But yeah, it doesn't seem like the traditional trilogy ending.
Yeah, it almost seems like a, hey, we're going to close this off, but Sandman's not technically gone. MJ and Peter are not technically together. So if you were to make a fourth movie, you can still do some things. But having said that, how do you think Spider-Man 3 holds up? Or if you think people should watch it for curiosity's sake?
I think people should watch it for curiosity's sake. But just for curiosity, enjoy it, have a laugh, have a giggle, and then if you want to watch good movies, I still sign up to my watch the first 30 minutes of Spider-Man 1 and then go watch the MCU. I think that's the best Spider-Man experience in 2019, but if we didn't get those movies, it could be a situation where we never would have had the good Spider-Man, but it definitely made it take a long time to get there because of what Spider-Man 3 did. It really burned the bridge for a long time when it comes to Spider-Man and superhero movies, because those first movies were kind of the gold standard for what you can do with a superhero movie in the 2000s. And then Spider-Man 3 kind of became the, oh, this is what happens if you let them keep going. It's going to get there eventually. And it soured the legacy of the first two movies. And I think it sours the trilogy as a whole, because you're always thinking to yourself, like, okay, I'm going to enjoy Spider-Man 1. I'm going to enjoy Spider-Man 2. But then there's 3. But I have to watch it because it's the entire trilogy. And I think it's unfortunate for that reason. And I wish it just would have been a little better so we can at least look at the entire trilogy as a whole more fondly.
Yeah, I think when it comes to this trilogy, I would probably order it as 2, 1, 3 as like the order of best to worst. And it really kills me to put 3 as the worst, because I was so on board for that first hour of the movie. And I think the first hour of the movie does a lot of things way better than Spider-Man 1. But if we have to look at these movies holistically, Spider-Man 1 is just a more solid, complete movie.
Randy Savage.
Yes, and it does have Randy Savage. So Spider-Man 2 is definitely, like, if you want to know what this trilogy, if you want to see the best of this trilogy, in my opinion, Spider-Man 2 is definitely where it's at. If you like memes, you should see Spider-Man 3, because the memes are still relevant to this day. Like that whole shopping carts be like meme or whatever, where it's got Peter Parker doing his dance and then where he's spinning around. You still see it pop up all the time. We just literally talked about that cut where someone did the dance sequence without the music. So if you want to be in on the memes, watch Spider-Man 3. And if you really want the full context, I mean, yeah, if you're really that curious, definitely check out the full trilogy. But Spider-Man 2, I think, certainly holds up the best of the three.
I'm going to have to agree. I think that my order would be Spider-Man 2, then one, and then the third one. Although, I think that the most interesting thing that anybody could do is like, what's the first 30 minutes of each one? Because I think from a cinematic standpoint, I remember the first one, it's like, it's not even obvious that it's a superhero movie from the way that it's shot to the music to just the acting. And this one, even if it's not the best of the Spider-Man movies, you definitely get the sense that it's a superhero movie. And I think that they did right, whether it went sour, whether it was forced pressure by the producers or whatever the case. I do think that this is a fascinating movie to watch because never have I loved or been close to loving the first half of the movie, only to hate the second half of the movie. You know, we reviewed The Matrix on the podcast. Maybe we eventually cover Reloaded and Revolutions in preparation of the fourth one, but you can watch the first Matrix movie, not watch any of the sequels, and you're good. You're literally not missing out on anything from a storytelling standpoint. Spider-Man 1, you have to watch the second one because it's like, here we go. So you have to treat this as a trilogy. There are other movie trilogies, but this is a definitive thing. This is like Lord of the Rings, right? This is a movie where you have to responsibly watch all of them. And the fact that it's a slippery slope and then at the very end, it's like, what is even happening here is very disappointing. So everybody that's watching and listening, we would love to know, what did you think about this movie or the trilogy as a whole? You can send us a tweet, a cast of the past. We're also on Instagram and all of that. And I want to give you guys a really good question, and everybody listening as well. If we were to review another trilogy or series of movies, it can be a movie that only got one sequel of any genre, is there anything that's kind of piquing your interest right now?
You know, part of me wants to go down the Terminator rabbit hole because I know there'll be a lot of conversations because they seem to be having a tough time to try and get on the right track. They've never been able to find their stride after the second one, and now we got Dark Fate coming out. So who knows? I think it would be a very interesting, similar to Spider-Man, I think it would be a very interesting conversation we would have between all of them because there's some garbage ones in there, there's some mediocre ones, and of course we have some amazing ones.
For that exact reason, the first thing that comes to mind as would be like a fun experiment would be like one of the horror movie tent poles going through all of those, like doing all the Friday the 13th, starting at the one.
That would be it's like an entire commitment.
Yeah.
Well, we got the next 10 years of Halloween taken care of, and eventually Jason will end up in space. It'll be a good time.
See, for me, my answer is completely different. You guys went like the action horror route. I know, Ryan, you're going to like my pick, but I like to cover Wayne's World, the first and the second one, because those movies are so about their time. Like you watch Wayne's World and you're immediately taken to that time, from the logos to just everything about the experience. So it's like not only reviewing the movies, you're kind of reviewing the time period, plus like Mike Myers before, like, I mean, this really catapulted him, even though people already knew of him.
Before Austin Powers and Shrek.
Exactly. So I think that would be a fascinating thing. So we have three different possibilities and other ones that could come up. So if any of you that listen or watch haven't, we do have a Discord, castofthepast.com/Discord. And Ryan, I usually have you deliver some positive messages on social media, but Keith, give us something pretty because it's been rough. This review has been rough. So give us a positive note to take us home.
Well, in the wise words of Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility. And if you're going to take the time to do something, no matter how big or how small, make sure that you're adding a sense of responsibility to it. Don't just aimlessly do things for the sake of doing them. Have reasons behind it. Have motivation. And make that motivation a positive one, because at the end of the day, you'll make the world a better place.
That was way deeper. I think that's the deepest key that I've ever listened to in my life.
Yeah.
On a cast.
Go deeper. Deeper on the past.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.